Blog Talk Radio.
Another Friday night edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another great show. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click, tag, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're talking to Dee Crane, the mother of Tavis Crane. And after the week we've had, her story gives us hope. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled recently that a civil lawsuit against Arlington police officer Craig Roper, who shot and killed Tavis Crane on February 1st, 2017, can move forward. They denied Craig Roper's claim of qualified immunity, which would have protected him from a lawsuit. Roper killed Tavis Crane during a traffic stop after Corporal Elisa Bowden mistook a fake candy cane as a crack pipe. Roper, as a backup officer, reportedly put Crane in a chokehold and shot him four times, causing his car to move and hit the other officer. The grand jury cleared Roper in 2019. So tonight, Dee Crane will tell us about how the grand jury clearing Officer Roper did not stop her from appealing the decision. That said, let's talk Fort Worth. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome Mrs. Dee Crane to Let's Talk Fort Worth for the very first time. Good evening, Dee. How are you?
Hello. How are you? I'm great.
How are you? Listen, as I said, it's been a terrible week in Fort Worth with all this going on with this Tatiana Jefferson file or case. But when I heard about yours and the fact that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with you, it gave us hope. So let's start from the beginning. We understand that it was February 1st, 2017. What was going on with Tavis that day?
Well, on that day, I had seen Tavis earlier. He had come by the house, and we had just talked. You know, he had gone by the Dallas Barber School to talk to somebody about, you know, getting in school. Now, he knew he had some warrants, and he had talked to his probation officer about maybe sending out those warrants so he can get a clean slate. You know, it was misdemeanor warrants. The media wants you to think he had felony warrants, but none of those could have been confirmed. And I'm sure if he had misdemeanor warrants, then, you know, him talking to his probation officer, he would have been arrested there. But anyway, he had went and talked to them. And they had worked out a plan on him sitting out these misdemeanor tickets. And, you know, just getting on with his life. He was only 23, getting his stuff together. So we had talked, and he hugged me. And then he was walking out the door, and for some reason, he turned around and hugged me again. And I remember him saying, "Mama, I got this," or "Mama, I'll be all right," or something to that effect. And then papers that I had to read, because the Arlington Police Department never talked to me about the situation. I read that they stopped him around 11:30 that night. So between 11:30 and around 12, Tavis was killed by Craig Roker.
Wow.
Who entered into his car after a traffic stop by Elise Fogan, who thought he was throwing out a crack pipe, and it ended up being candy wrapper or the little candy cane wrapping stuff that you get around the Christmas holidays, because they said that the two-year-old had a lap full of candy and even offered candy to the officer. And then to experience this situation at two, she's now eight and she still remembers.
Wow. So let's back up. So it's 11:30 at night on February 1st, 2017, and Tavis is in the car, I understand, with two adults, and his daughter was in the backseat. His two-year-old daughter was in the backseat.
Two-year-old daughter. And so she's sitting on one side, and the adult female is sitting directly behind Tavis, who is the driver.
Mm-hmm. So how does, if it's 11:30 at night, how does the police officer see a pipe come out of the car?
I said she didn't see a pipe come out of no car. What she saw was the car, which it was a white Crown Victoria that Tavis had really just got. He had just got that car. Him and his girlfriend had just gotten that car maybe like a week or two. And she didn't see no, it was right here off of 30 in Arlington. She didn't see anything. To me, if she saw something come out, she just saw the car. And it's a shame that we are judged by the cars we drive, the clothes we wear, the neighborhood we live in, the school we go to. We are the only nation of people that are judged by that. So it was the car he was driving. That's what probably caught her attention.
So to be clear, Travis wasn't like, she hadn't even got behind him, you know, for him to even throw out anything, if he was going to throw out something, because, you know, like police is coming and you're throwing out something so that they won't see you with it. She wasn't even behind him for anything. So she allegedly stopped him just because the two-year-old threw a candy cane plastic container out of the window.
Right. And then she got behind him and pulled him over. And she said, "You got felony warrants." And according to the documents, he said that no felony warrants could be confirmed.
Wow. Why wasn't it over right there when she discovered there weren't any felony warrants?
Because they had to arrest somebody.
Oh, wow.
So he had to, you know, he had misdemeanor once. Like I said, couldn't have been too bad because he had seen the probation officer and spoken with the probation officer, and they, you know, coming up with a plan or whatever he had done. So, I mean, if it was that bad, they would have, to me, would have went on and arrested Travis or something to get Travis, you know. But I said somebody had to go to jail, and Elise Bolden didn't want to look like a fool. That, oh, I stopped this black man thinking he's throwing out crack pipe in his candy paper or candy container. I can't look stupid when I go back to the precinct. So something's got to go down. Somebody's got to go to jail. Oh, he's got these warrants. Even the Fifth Circuit Court on one of the documents, the man said Travis should have got a ticket and went on his way.
So we're talking about a corporal. So how long had Elisa Bowden been on the job?
She'd been on the precinct for 14 years at that time. Wow. She was on the force for like 14 years. Craig Roper only been on the force for 2 years at that time.
Mm-hmm. And so she gets to the car.
She should have been able to maintain her sight.
Mm-hmm. I agree. She should have, at 14 years experience, she should have been able to make a stop without getting a backup for somebody who's throwing paper out of a car. That should have been a littering warrant. A littering ticket at best. And that should have been it.
Correct.
I mean, I don't get it. So she's at the car, and she's talking mm-hmm. to Travis. And does he understand that she's going to arrest him?
I'm sure he did, because they said at some point he got on the phone with his daughter's mom, he was living with his daughter's mom at that time. So they were on the phone, and he was telling her to come get Zaya because he was going to go to jail. So at some point, I'm sure he knew. He just didn't want to leave the car with the baby because the two adults were not able to take the baby anyway with them. And so, I mean, that's his, Travis was real close to his daughter, real close. And she'll tell you even now, you know, I'm my daddy's heart. So she knew that. And so everywhere he went, she went. So he didn't want anybody else to take her. And it's a shame that as a black men can't protect black women. Mm-hmm. They can't protect their black daughters. They can't protect their black girlfriends because the white society doesn't allow them to. They want them to be hood rat thumps, thugs, bums, lowlifes, just enough and bad. And Travis was very much so present in his daughter's life. So he couldn't take.
So he's on the phone trying to get his girlfriend to come get the baby before he goes in. So he didn't mind being arrested. He just wanted to secure his daughter getting the safety before he was arrested.
Right. He needed to have a blood relative to come and get the baby because he was going to be arrested. And neither one of the adults could take her, I guess because the cop had said, you know, they couldn't take her. And who wants CPS in their lives? Nobody. CPS was be under sanction all the time anyway. So they didn't want CPS, you know, to take the baby. So he was trying to get his girlfriend to come and get her. And he was, you know, willing. Had they moved the baby, everything could have been, if they would have waited, everything would have been okay. You being standoff for 12 and 13, 16 hours with people who are doing stuff or don't want to come out of the house or anything, and you couldn't have waited for maybe 30 minutes for her to come get her daughter. No, that was racist.
And so, okay, so he's talking to Corporal Bowden, and he's trying to negotiate with her to let his girlfriend come and get the baby. So at what point and why does Corporal Bowden decide she needs backup?
Because they said, okay, so they said that Travis wasn't being in compliance. I need you to understand, Travis isn't being in compliance. And if you look that up, in 1774, there's a compliance law that they were given to the slaves that said a master had the right to kill his slave if the slave was noncompliant. So Tavis was basically murdered off of a 1774 law, noncompliant. But Corporal Elise Bolden, she is the professional person, the manager, the on this site. And Craig Roper, who only been on the force 2 years, ignored her command.
Okay,
she told him to get out of the car. She tapped him and told him to stop, and he did not.
Wait, we're getting ahead of the story. So at what point does he go from he getting on the scene to getting in the car? So he shows up, so she calls her back up, and then Roper shows up, and then what happens?
So according to the documents that I read, 2 minutes after Craig Roper got on the scene, Tavis is still not getting out of the car. 30 seconds after Craig Roper opens up the back passenger door, placing Tavis in a chokehold, telling Tavis with his gun drawn that I will kill you. He killed Tavis 30 seconds after he entered the car.
You know, hold up. I always assume that he got in behind the driver. So if he came in off the other side, he's already at a disadvantage. You see what I'm saying?
He came in. Okay, so Tavis is the driver. So he didn't open the driver's door. He opened the driver's passenger door. So he's behind Tavis.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so he then jumped in behind Tavis.
Correct.
And, okay.
The car was never secured. So the car was never off. Another officer was on the scene telling the other passenger to turn the car off, and Tavis leaned up to turn the car off and said, you know, I could turn the car off. So the car was never off. So with Craig Roper racing behind, getting up into the car, putting my son in a chokehold, pulling him up over the seat, that's when the car moved.
So the car is never in park. And so Travis's foot is on the brake. And that, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So his foot is on the brake and the car is never in park. So when he was put in the chokehold and lifted up, his feet came off of the brake.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Mm. And of course, you know, Craig Walker is shooting him in the back. And so that's when the car is moving. So Craig Roper now has to gain control of the car.
So the car is moving backwards.
It moved backwards, and then I'm assuming that when Tavis just slumped over, then Craig Roper probably could get a hand to the steering wheel and the ignition, and the gear shift, and then the car drifted forward and came to a complete stop. So Craig Roper also was in non-compliance. Maybe Elise Bolden should have shot him to death.
So, if you are behind someone and you have them in a chokehold and they are in this tight space, like a car is, it's a tight space for the most part because you're under the steering wheel. Yeah. So at what point was Craig Roper's life in danger for him to start shooting?
Craig Roper's life was never in danger. That's
so why was
lie.
He shooting?
That's the lie that they put out there. Because he was saying, he didn't know if Tavis wanted to run away and get into somebody's house or whatever. He has his daughter in the car. Tavis wasn't going to leave his daughter. So that was a lie.
So, but wait a minute. But he never got out of the car. So, I mean, that's like, that's like jumping to some serious conclusions. If he never left the car, why would you assume that you needed to shoot him to keep him from fleeing?
Right, because what they wanted to do at first, they wanted to paint Tavis as a bad person using the car as a weapon. He ran over the police officer. He never did that. Craig Roper did that. And I hope everybody hears me when I say, Officer Craig Roper ran over Corporal Elise Bolden, not Tavis Crane. So
let's back
they're in a neighborhood. So he was saying, I guess he now he's a mastermind or some kind of mind reader, saying that he could flee and, I guess, run into some of these houses that was around in the neighborhood. But you know Titus wasn't going to do that, because then he would again leave his child. He wasn't going to do that. So he had to, the officer, Elise Bolden, at the end lied and said, oh, I was in fear for my life. No, how was you in fear for your life when you're standing behind the car and Craig Wolf is inside the car murdering my son? Where was your life in danger? Whose life is in danger? Tavis, who was killed, the baby who was in the back seat, and the two witnesses.
Okay, let's start here. One thing, I interrupted her, so I want to go back to when she said Corporal Bowden tapped him on the shoulder, him being Craig Roper, Officer Craig Roper, when he got in the car. Mm-hmm. And if anybody doesn't know that, you're never supposed to get in the car. If you're an officer, you're always mm-hmm. supposed to be outside the car. So he broke protocol by even getting in the car.
Yes.
So you said she tapped him on the shoulder to say don't.
Right. And he disobeyed his superior.
Mm-hmm.
She is
mm-hmm.
his superior.
Mm-hmm.
She has been on the force for over 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
She tapped him on, I read it, she tapped him on the shoulder, telling him to get out the car, and he did not. So who's in non-compliance now? Craig Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you pull a gun in an exchange like what's going on, you got somebody in the chokehold and you got a baby in the back seat and two adults, and then Tavis.
Right.
I mean, literally everybody could have got killed.
Everybody could have got killed. And who's at
yeah.
fault? The whole department of Arlington Police Department is at fault. The whole department of Arlington Police Department has the blood of my son on his hand, on their hand. I don't care how new they are, how old they are, how long they've been on the police department, how long you've been on the police, their hands are tainted.
Mm-hmm. So
how can you're teaching us to disobey? You can't work even at a hospital and the director of nursing tells you to do something and you continue to do what you want to do. You're going to lose your job. But Craig Roper didn't lose his job. And she told him to come out the car. He murdered my son. He should have been fired.
But I guess I'm still confused. Tavis never struck Officer Roper. So, because he couldn't. I mean, from the position he was in, he was at a disadvantage. So how was Roper in fear for his life? And if he was, and if someone is fleeing, you don't shoot somebody who's fleeing, do you? If that was where his mind went.
That's the same old sad song that we've been hearing, In Fear for My Life. You heard it with George Dillon talking about he was in fear for his life when they told him not to chase after Trayvon Martin, but he was in fear for his life. You hear it with Christian Taylor. They said they told that officer to stand down. Okay, that officer got fired, but if you wouldn't have been in fear for your life had you not followed behind Christian Taylor, in fear for your life. You hear that Tatiana Justin, when she stepped in front of the window with her gun, it's her house. That man would have never been in fear for his life had he announced himself. So that's a sad, same old song. They're beating a dead horse and expect us to continue to dance to the same old dead horse music. No, in fear for your life. Really, you put yourself there, and you're executing people who are trying to protect themselves or who are not escalating the situation. Police officers do not de-escalate. They are escalating these situations.
But I understand he shot him in the back four times. So how are you in fear for your life when you got someone in a chokehold and you're shooting them in the back?
That's just a lie that they're telling. So that they're white officers. He wears a blue uniform. He could say, in fear for my life. And then you have district attorneys who, like Sharon Wilson, who can say, oh, this officer put his life in jeopardy. We got to do something, giving them qualified immunity. And half of them, over half of these officers, do not deserve qualified immunity, not off the bat. Not off the bat. They don't.
So when
I don't believe that.
Go ahead.
I don't believe that if you work at a certain precinct, if you work at an Arlington police officer, I don't believe that the Arlington internal affairs need to investigate Arlington police officers, because we could be friends and buddies. And of course, I'm going to let you off. I think another entity needs to come in and investigate all police shootings.
Well, I agree. So I understood that it was another officer, Officer Johnson, that showed up at the scene with Craig Roper. So what was his involvement in the whole situation?
He was standing over on the driver's side of the car. He was the one that told one of the witnesses to turn the car off. And I guess when the witness was going to turn the car off, Travis again leaned up and was going to turn the car off. So he never entered to the car. But I blame him, too, because you didn't see Craig Roper get in the car. And if Elise Bolden couldn't stop, if she wasn't woman enough or have enough professionalism to make Craig Roper get out the car and stop, maybe you should have said something and said, hey, man, that's enough. But no, y'all allowed him to do that to my son. And so that's why I blame the whole police department.
So it appears, you know, it's for me, just reading the story about it, it seemed to me that Officer Roper was like reckless endangerment of everybody in the car, because it's a small confined area and you're discharging a weapon four times. The bullets could have went anywhere. They could have hit something metal and ricocheted and hit other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was, in my opinion, very reckless in discharging that weapon.
Because
he had backup. So he had two officers there. So I don't see what the point was to pull a gun and shoot it inside the car.
There was no point for Craig Roper's weapon to have ever come into play. There was no point for Craig Roper to have ever gotten in that car. First of all, we're talking about being in compliance. Why is it that Craig Roper, who only been on the force 2 years, how is it that you overpowered a woman who was on the force for 14 years? So you totally ignored and disrespected her position. You a rookie. And you disrespected her position, and you did what you wanted to do. Why? Because he was a black man.
And she was the senior person on the scene. She was the senior person. So absolutely, she called him for backup, what first thing. And then second thing is that, you know, when she said enough or come out of there, he should have realized, oh, my God, I am all the way in this car, and I'm not supposed to do that. I'm not ever supposed to get into the vehicle. But it seems like his judgment was, like, totally poor. And if I understood you correctly, the minute he got on the scene, he went into reaction mode before properly assessing everything that was going on.
Right. He escalated the situation from the beginning. He'd only been there 2 minutes. So, yes, he escalated the situation. He did not de-escalate. A lot of these officers, they don't escalate. They don't de-escalate a situation. They escalate a situation. For example, I got pulled over from my officer in Plano. He came to my car with his hand on his weapon automatically. Why? Because he saw a black person. And then when he was telling me, oh, you know, I need to get a license and registration, I told him, no, I'm not going to move because I don't want to be killed. Of course I don't want to be killed. And he's like, well, he told me, he said, you watch too much TV. And I said, excuse me? He said, you watch too much TV. I said, sir, my family is a victim of police brutality. Then his whole attitude changed. His whole attitude changed. So how is it that I watch too much TV? This is what's happening in the black community. This is what happens when you drive black. You get pulled over. They come to your car with their hands on their guns, thinking you're going to do something crazy. Why? Because you're black. But it takes them a minute when they stop, stop white drivers. I've seen plenty of videos, white women jumping out the car, hollering and screaming, running up on the cop, slapping the cop in the face. And you didn't pull your weapon? You didn't pull your weapon. But unarmed black drivers are executed in the United States all the time.
Listen, if you just tune in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth, and I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight we're talking to Dee Crane, the mother of Tavis Crane, who was killed February 2017 by Arlington Police Officer Craig Roper. Allegedly, Mr. Roper's corporal thought that she saw Tavis's daughter throwing a crack pipe out of the window, and that was allegedly her reason for the stop. But we know recently that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decided that Craig Roper did not deserve qualified immunity. But before we get to that part, so people are confused because if you watch the news coverage, it showed like the officer or the corporal Bowden appearing to get run over. So explain, how is it that she got herself in a position with 14 years of experience where she says she got run over?
Right. So it's funny that she's a professional, and really everybody should not walk behind the car because the driver can't see you. You're supposed to always walk in front of the car. So mm-hmm. she walks behind the car. We can only assume that she's probably going behind the car to maybe get the baby out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she walks behind the car, Craig Roper is in the car and pulling Tavis over the seat, and then the car moves. And then, you know, of course, mm-hmm. you can see him shooting Tavis, and you can see the fire, the smoke of the gun coming out the windows or whatever, and that's when she gets hit. She wasn't hit that bad, so I need to let the people know she wasn't hit that bad. She apparently fell, but if you watch the video, she walked to the ambulance. She walked and gets on the stretcher. She walked and put her stuff on the stretcher, so she wasn't hurt that bad. So, but again, Tavis did not hit her. Craig Walker did that.
So, at what point were you notified that this had happened?
So what happened was, mind you, Tavis's daughter's mom is on the phone with Tavis when he got shot.
Oh,
and
my
she
God.
Calls. Tavis has a twin brother. So his twin brother comes in the room and tells me, "Hey, Mom, get up. The cop shot Tavis." We get to the Randall Mill Hospital in Arlington, and the doctor comes out and tells me that, you know, Tavis had died, and shows us how Tavis was shot, denies me. They said that Chief Will Johnson had already denied me, said I could not see my son's dead body because my dead son was handcuffed. I found that out later, that he was still handcuffed. They handcuffed my dead son. But they told me to go home. And they said, an officer will come and speak with you. No officer ever came to my house to speak with me. It was on the news. So this is how I was finding out stuff about my son, on the news.
But I can't understand, though, if you're at the hospital, what was the reason that they say that you could not see the body?
They really didn't give me a reason. At first they said it was a crime scene. I'm like, how the heck is it a crime scene when he was murdered at a traffic stop on the street? But I just said they denied Emmett Till's mother the right to see her son's body. That's what they want to do. They just want to hurry up and throw you in the dirt like you some kind of slave that's unwanted. Dig a hole, put them in there, bury them, and leave them alone. That's what I said that they wanted me to do, even with Tavis. Just don't let them see them. Just, you know, take them to the morgue and let it be. I remember going to the bathroom, and I just knew, looking in the mirror, I said, that cop killed my son. Before I even got to the hospital, I said, I know that cop killed my son. And I prayed and I asked God, I said, if you could please just give me the spirit of Mamie Till. I don't know why I prayed that prayer. I just prayed that prayer. Can I please have the spirit of Mamie Till? I felt like she was so strong to endure such a horrific act done to her son. And I just asked God for that. So when I saw it on the news, I said, now, I want you to understand, I have other children. That my oldest son was in Dallas, so he didn't know Travis had been killed. I have family members who were all over Arlington and Texas. They didn't know. So imagine you getting up, finding out that your nephew, your brother, your cousin has been murdered by police, and you're finding out not by your family members, but on the news.
Oh, wow. And so at what point were you allowed to view the body?
I was never allowed to view the body. So my family is from Louisiana. So my mother-in-law called a mortician that she knows in Louisiana. He calls somebody here in Texas, and he knows and says, hey, my friend's grandson was murdered. Can you get the body?
Yeah.
He went and picked up the body, and then my mother's friend, who's a mortician, has his own funeral home in Louisiana. He came down, and he picked up my son's body. I was never able to see Travis until we had his funeral that Saturday. I saw him that Friday, 12 hours or 16 hours before his funeral.
Now, that's cruel punishment. I mean, seriously, that's unacceptable. I mean, so you already know something's wrong when they're trying to deny you to see him. Oh, my God.
Not even the right to see him. And then people saying, I mean, I had people calling me who didn't even know me, said, hey, Ms. Crane, don't let them take your son's body parts and give them to nobody else who's dying, not his eyes, his organs, his nothing. And trust me, now I want you to understand that nobody came to me and talked to me about Travis, how Travis, what had happened. I had to hear it on the news, and then I knew the news media, white media, was lying. I came home, and I would say all of this transpired from about 4 to 6 o'clock. They're just running it. About 9 o'clock, the morgue calls me, asking me for my son's body part.
No, they didn't. The Tarrant County Medical Examiner.
Did.
Oh, my God.
Yes, they called and said, we want to know if you want to donate organs to whomever. And I said, I don't care. And I didn't care. Somebody could be dying. Somebody could need a heart, a liver, a lung, a toenail. I didn't care. No. Everything that God sent him here with, he's going to go home with. No,
that's
I didn't
right.
care.
Mm-hmm. So now this is what sounds like to me. This sounds odd to me. If he is deceased, why were they asking you after the fact for those organs? Because the organs would have been shut down by then, right? At the body's at the medical examiner's office.
Mm-hmm. But they called me.
They call
wow.
Me. Wow.
They called me.
But you know they do turn bodies over to science.
Yeah, they do.
They do turn bodies.
Like Travis, he said he had a his blood type was rare. It could operate like if you're O positive, his blood type could, you know, he could donate to whomever. So even when he would donate blood or plasma, he said, Mama, really, I get a little extra because of my blood type. He said, really, I could give you blood and turn around and give somebody else blood who's not the same blood type because that's the kind of blood type he had. And I recently heard another black girl say, she had some issues, and she said it was her blood type, and they wanted to study her.
So did they take his body part?
No, I told them. Now I told them no. A friend of mine whose son was also murdered. He said I should have told you earlier to ensure that they didn't take anything from Travis, but when we got to Louisiana, they said that Travis was wrapped, and Travis was about 5'11", and he wasn't very big. From his chest all the way down, his whole torso area was wrapped wrapped in tape or whatever. So my husband said he probably was trying to take it, and then they called us at 9, asking us for body parts, and I said no. And I said,
so did you ever pull the tape off? Did y'all ever pull the tape off to make sure that they didn't?
I did not, but this is what I said, and I had to pray about it, but I said, if they stole anything out of Sabbath, whoever they gave that body part to, they going to die. They're not going to live, because he asked me, and I said no, and I meant no. I meant no, because nobody, like I said, nobody came and sat down and talked to me and said, this is what happened. This, you know, nobody. I'm reading documents, even September of this year, November the 1st of this year, I'm reading transcripts that have been stuff that has been, to me, brushed up under the rug trying to protect this white officer. I'm reading these documents of what he's saying happened, how he's changing his story, lies that have been told on my son. I'm reading this. And still nobody has picked up the phone and said, hey, Ms. Crane, we're from the Arlington Police Department. Can we talk?
Okay. This is great. And the reason I asked you that, the question about are you sure they didn't take the body parts, I have, my mom's best friend, son was killed in California by the police. And so by the time the family got there from Tennessee, they had taken the body parts. And so the family sued because the body parts were not, no one ever gave him permission to take the body parts. And it wasn't on his driver's license that he was, going to donate his organs. So, yeah, I know they will do it.
Yeah,
That's a whole nother story. And so, okay, so that happened. And they tried to make Tavis out to be a really bad person. And, he ran over the officer and she was in really bad shape, let them tell it. But as you said, Corporal Bowden got up and walked to the stretcher. So she couldn't have been broken legs and all the other stuff that they alleged had happened to her.
Right.
Okay. Right. So she goes to Tom.
Right. And see, my oldest son had been hit by a car. So I went through that. Nothing was wrong with her. If she had any bumps and bruises or scrapes and scratches, it's because she fell. Now, she did fall, probably hit that curb, but she wasn't in fear for her life. You sat out here talking to Tavis forever and a day. Then you call for backup. You walking behind the car. You shouldn't have walked behind the car. That's where your car is parked. Tavis' car isn't secure. I know you went through training, and they teach you. Even now, during the Christmas holidays, cops tell you, don't walk behind the car. Walk in front.
Right. Absolutely. And so, okay, so in after all the dust had settled, in 2019, they cleared Roper of any wrongdoing. But most people, D. Crane, would have stopped right there. What made you pursue it past that point?
Because as a mother, when you know your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know your child. As a mother, if you have more than one child, you know when he's lying and when he's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You just know. So I knew when they said, oh, he ran over an officer, I said, they lying. They lying. And then if you wasn't a liar, you would have been knocking my door down to kind of tell me what happened. But it's like when I called, I wanted to talk to somebody. Nobody wanted to talk to me. Nobody wanted to give me any time. So I feel like you're covering it up. So even though he killed my son in February of 2017, 2018, January, Chief Will Johnson honored Craig Roper, the murderer, a Medal of Valor.
Wow.
Then they turned around and Sharon Wilson and them didn't find any evidence to charge this officer. So they just been giving Craig Roper a pass. So finally, here we are, 5 years later, almost 6 years later, the Circuit Court says, yo, you're not eligible for qualified immunity.
Wow. What was that day like when you found that out?
I was coming home from work, and just so happened, I don't know why, I kind of got up that day, and at my job, I said, you know what, I'm not going to take an hour lunch today. I'm going to do a 30-minute lunch. I don't know why, I just didn't want, I said, I'll just go home early. That's what I'll do. I'll leave at 30 minutes, 5, I'm going to leave at 4:30. And so I would say by the time I got in my car then and got to the red light, my lawyer, who's Darryl, his name is Darryl Washington, he was calling me. So, of course, my heart just jumped. And he said, hey, Ms. Klein, you know, when I call, something has happened. And I guess I was thinking in my head, you know, I'm such a fighter. It's time to fight. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. It's time to fight. And I think when he was trying to explain to me that they had overturned it, I didn't understand what he was saying. He was like, Ms. Klein, they reversed it. And I was like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, what the hell is he saying? I don't understand. I'm not giving it. He said, Ms. Klein, what are you doing? I said, I'm driving. I said, let me pull over because I was going to tell him to appeal it again. Appeal that. Appeal that. Because really, Officer Will Johnson, who was the chief in Arlington, who's not the chief anymore, but he was the chief in Arlington, and Craig Wolfe, they wanted to just stop it, stop the whole thing. And the Tarrant County had agreed with them on that. They didn't want us to sue. They wanted us to just go away. But I said, no, let's appeal. So we went to the Fifth Circuit Court, and then they overturned that appeal. They said, no, he is not eligible for qualified immunity. So I'm sitting in the parking lot, and Darryl is like, Ms. Klein, what does overturn mean? What does reverse mean? Thinking, I hear his words, but I wasn't understanding his words. So I just started crying. I was like, I don't know what he's saying. I said, Lord, please help me, because I don't know what he's saying. And he said, Ms. Christie, what does reverse mean? I said, reverse means, you know, it goes back. He said, exactly. And then I couldn't get it in my head, and I said, wait, it goes back, meaning they found it in our favor. And he said, yes, Ms. Crane. So I had to sit in the parking lot and just cry. I just had to cry it out. I really did. I just had to cry it out. I was like, I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, Lord, I know what reverse means. I'm not stupid. I understand this. I was a colleague. What is he saying? And then once I calmed down, and he said, Ms. Crane, we can go to trial. So that night I called another activist, and I said, hey, they reversed it. They found it in our favor. And we gathered some people together. We had a small protest. I want you to understand it was a small protest with a lot of people. We went up to the police department. I wanted Craig Walker fired. I do. I still want him fired. He should not be working inside, outside, under the building, on top of the building. Not for the Arlington Police Department. He needs to be fired. He is still on my taxpaying dollars. I am not a paid a mafia. I do not send people out to kill nobody. But I'm paying him his salary. He is a paid assassin. So, and I want you to know that we went in, and you should have seen how Arlington Police treated us. 5 years later now, one lady was like, she was like, they were acting so arrogant, so hostile toward us. So I said, I wonder if Craig Walker is here somewhere. So another activist said, yeah, Craig Walker is here. He works here. He still works here at night, 3-11.
Whoa.
And so a lieutenant came in to speak with us. And he took us to the back of the police department, side through a side door, and we were in there talking. His phone rings. We can clearly hear the man say, are you still in the meeting? He said, yes. He said, is Ms. Craig still with you? He said, yes. He said, well, Craig Walker is walking out. Don't want any conflicts or whatever. Can they just stay in the back? So the night I was at the police department, talking to a lieutenant, Craig Walker was in the building. They kept us in the back. until he actually left. Then a couple of nights later, we had another small protest. They knew we were coming. They had about 8 police officers' cars in the Arlington police parking lot. Another lady said that she saw Craig Wolfer walking out the door. I didn't see him because I was holding a sign. It's nighttime. I'm holding a sign, walking up and down the street. So by the time I got back down to where they were, she said, "Miss Crane, that's him right there." Now, I did see a white man walk into a car. Now, he's escorted by these police officers.
Whoa.
He looked our way, and they put him in the car, and they took him wherever. She said, all they're doing is driving him to his car like we're going to do something to him at the police department. Now, black people, we may be crazy, but we ain't that crazy. So we don't come up there and start blowing stuff up, shooting stuff, and, you know, we don't do that. White people do that. We don't do that. And it was a bunch of, most of us were women. I'm not saying women can't do what they do, but most of us was women. We had some men out there, but the majority of us who was out there that particular night were women. What we going to do? Nothing.
Wow.
We were outside. Craig Wolfer could have came or, and the thing about it is he could have walked out of any one of those doors and got in his car and went on his business. We probably would have never paid attention to him. But
they could have put a camera on him
out. They paraded him out. They made a big about it. And I'm like, So I feel like that's how I feel like I need to continue to fight, because you're showing me y'all doing something dirty. Just because you wear a blue uniform, that does not mean that you are above the law. Those people, whether you're in a pulpit or in a uniform, you break the law. Craig Wolfer is a murderer. He broke the law. And y'all are showing me that he's a liar. And y'all want to protect the liar.
Let me say what they said, what the judge on the Fifth Circuit, well, one of the judges on the Fifth Circuit Court said, and it's very, very, very telling. He says, and the opinion says, if officers have qualified immunity in this country, you act within the boundaries of the law. You get a break. You're immune to liability. We respect you. When we respect you, you have to make tough judgment calls when you're in law enforcement. I don't know why I'm getting tongue-tied tonight, y'all. But that's not a blanket pass to do anything you want to do. And we have a situation here where somebody got shot because of a candy cane. This is when you get right down to it, and we need to understand fully what happened, and there needs to be a full trial on the merit and not have this case just be dismissed. So that said, are you all wanting a trial?
Yeah. You know what? It's funny because somebody asked me maybe a couple of days ago, how could I handle the trial? Mm-hmm. And I think about how maybe Tills had to sit in that courtroom across from the man who murdered her son. And she had to have dignity and sit there. And I think about how Bolton John's mother had to sit there with Amber Geiger and her family, all dressed in blue. God was there. And I think about how Trayvon Martin's mom had to sit there, or Ahmaud Arbery's mom had to sit in that place and listen to that lawyer grade her son right down to his dirty fingernails and toenails, as if he was some kind of monster. I was like, Lord, I don't know if I could do that. But the other day I said, you know what? Yes, I can. Yes, I can. God give me strength and help me to sit there and help me be able to hold my emotions together so I can get justice for my son, so that nobody else will have to go through this. No other mother should have to go through this. Instead of me picking out an apartment for my son, picking out beds and some kind of pattern for my son, I was picking out a casket. Instead of me helping him get ready to walk down the aisle to get married, I'm picking out his final resting suit. That's what I was doing. So, yeah.
So when the veil of qualified immunity was lifted, does that make you able to sue the city and Craig Roper, or what?
Yes.
Where does things stand?
Yeah,
the city as well.
I can sue. Yeah, well, the city was supposed to be training him. What did you train him?
Yeah,
he was for the city. He still was for the city.
What did you train
Craig Roper? How to see it?
So did Corporal Bowden, does she have any responsibility, or was she suable as well, or just Roper?
I don't know if she's suable as well, but I said she's still accountable because she should have, you're a corporal. To me, that has some kind of weight to it. You are supervised. You should have been able to maintain control of the situation. And she was not. And I said, so maybe when some of these men are hollering about a woman shouldn't wear a badge, maybe they're right. Because she couldn't control her situation. She allowed this rookie to jump into the car. She allowed this rookie to disrespect her authority.
Very true. So you said Tavis's daughter was two then. So can she recant what happened that night? She remembers?
She remembers.
Oh my
God. She remembers. She remembers so much so that when she sees a bald headed white man, she talks about it. Because at that time, I think Craig Walker allowed his hair to grow back, but at that time he didn't have hair. So when she sees him, she talks about it. Her mom says she talks about Tavis as if he's right here with her all the time. So, yes, and when she sees a white woman, she says, is that a Karen?
Wow. Yeah. So they don't get over it, you know. They don't get over it. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, you know, we see what's going on with the trial here in Fort Worth, and we know it's a possibility, you know, it may not go the right way. Would you tell Tatiana's family to pursue what's the same avenue that you pursued?
Oh, yeah, fight no matter what. If they let him walk, appeal it. Fight. We as a black community, we can't just allow people to dictate to us. We need to start and taking control of our own narrative. That's what we have to do. We have to stop letting them say, oh, well, this officer was scared or this doctor is great. And no. If you know that the doctor is a liar, call him out. You elect people into office and they're not doing their job, call them out. The teacher ain't teaching your kid right, call them out. A cop is being excessively heavy-handed, call them out. Don't let the system tell you what's what. No, you start telling the system.
Someone just sent me a question in my inbox. They said, so I'm always suspicious when we get a dash cam release. That's what happened with Courtney Johnson's case, too. Was there body cam recording and radio dispatch recording related to the Crane case? Did you get any of that?
No.
Radio traffic?
At the time that Tavis was murdered, Arlington did not have body cam, and they didn't want it. But after Tavis was murdered, now their officers have body cam. And the dash cam they have, is to me all the time, you hear it all the time, they say, oh, it didn't work, something was wrong, whatever. I believe some of these officers are manipulating that dash cam, that's how I feel. But only thing that they could see was a dash cam. So we had to even fight to get the dash cam. And of course, the dash cam that we got, we already knew it was going to be edited. So that's when we got the water downgrade.
Wow. Let's go to the phone lines, 972-987. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hey, Carrie, thank you for taking my call. Good evening to you, and good evening to your guest on tonight, Miss Crane. Continued strength to you. God bless you. Thank you for your willingness to, your strength and your willingness to, you know, just to tell your son's story, you know, because he's not here anymore to speak for himself. So thank you for your continued strength and your desire just to move forward and let everyone know about the injustice that happened to your son. My observation of this is just straight to the point. Reckless, out of control, overzealous, nut job, trying to prove a point. Seems like he's trying to prove, like I said last week, care about these male officers. We know as men, we have a tendency to want to put on for women. We have a tendency to try to put on this bravo, macho, I'm this, I'm that. And it seems like this is what this situation was. He had an opportunity to interject his so-called authority and make a situation worse made a situation that should have even been worse than, you know, become what it is, you know, and a disregard, continual disregard for the life of others. You saw that challenge. You saw that challenge that caught. We know adults could be a threat, a possible threat, and not your son. I'm just saying, you know, we know how officers, they always try to perceive adults, but we're talking about a child. A child is no threat to nobody. You know what I'm saying? You just blatantly disregarded. You just blatantly disregarded her because you had a point to prove, you coward. And I hope and pray that someone is listening. But let's talk about complicit. Who's complicit in this? The Arlington PD. Hold on. Let me start from the top. The media. Because the media are always wanting to spin the narrative of law enforcement. They always spin the narrative of law enforcement. They always let the law enforcement narrative go out first without letting you know, just letting investigations go on or letting whatever needs to come out. The media always gets ahead because they want to be the first to get a story. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the media is complicit. The Forward Post, the Arlington Post, PD is complicit. That they're seen at night, they're complicit. You know what I'm saying? Jurors, these people who sit on these juries to make these, y'all are complicit. Because it's like all they see is, and I say the media first, because the media is the one who's put this narrative out here. They control the imagery. They control the messenger when it comes to us. And all these people see is bad, bad, bad. You know what I'm saying? I hope and pray to God that the courts, whoever's going to make this, stick it to them hard. You better find some lawyers that's going to aim. They better aim high. We ain't talking about no penny ante. We going to go this route. Mm-hmm. No, they aiming high. No dollar amount can rectify the situation. But they better stick it to them. We don't need one of those situations. And I'm going to digress. Thank you, Carrie, for taking my call. I'm going to continue listening. Ms. Crane, you continue your fight. Thank you. Thank you for your willingness. You know, because like I say, we get the narrative. It's always the narrative. The media. Thank you, Carrie, for using your platform. Mm-hmm. They can't control the platform, man. We know you're going to keep it. You're going to keep it 100. You let people tell their story.
I thought it was very crucial to tell her story because we don't know how this Tatiana Jefferson trial is going to turn out, but I thought this was a glimmer of hope to show that it ain't over, even though if they decide, okay, we're going to, let the officer go, which we pray to God that is not the case, but if that is the case, then have the fight that Dee Crane had and keep going, you know, appeal that decision to a higher court. And see what happens.
Let me say kudos to the Fifth Circuit for their willingness to say, This don't pass the smell test. Okay, Kim, I'm getting off and going back to listening. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you. You know what? D, you told me something. You said that the Fifth Circuit Court is a very conservative court.
Yes, that's what I was told. My lawyer said they were conservative, and another judge told me they were very conservative court. So, yes, that's what I was told, that they were very conservative people. I even looked up a couple of the judges, and now these are old white judges who are, like, I know one of them is in his 80s or so. But, yes, so these are conservative judges who have probably been around forever today. And for them to come back and start saying things like, you know, too many times when it comes to black and brown, the stop of black and brown drivers, these officers are using excessive force that is deadly.
Mm-hmm.
So they have probably seen a lot.
Absolutely.
So I am truly, truly, truly grateful that these judges have seen and see the wrong that these officers are doing, and is trying to make it right.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Since we booked this show, you said there's been an update as far as this case is concerned. What has happened since we booked the show?
Okay, since we booked the show, I got word that Craig Roper wants to have a rehearing. So I thought it was like an appeal. I don't think it's like an appeal. I looked it up. It's where they are trying to. To me, the best way I could see it is like, you know how you go to court and they ask the jury, you know, jury number one, what do you say? Jury number two, what do you say? So I think that they want a panel of judges to review the account of what these other judges have, you know, their decisions. So I was like, so you want to play these judges against each other? You know, these judges who said, Craig Roper was wrong. You want to play these other judges against each other, which I hope and pray to God that they really, really what I hope is I just want them to go ahead and deny his order and we can go to trial.
Oh, okay. Now I'm getting a better understanding. Okay, so you go. So if everything stands and they don't reverse their decision, then you go to trial.
You go to trial, yes.
And so are we talking?
Our trial isn't the same as Tatiana Jefferson's trial. Tatiana Jefferson's trial or George Floyd's trial. Those are criminals. So mine would be civil.
Okay.
And so even Malcolm John's trial was criminal. So my trial, even though we can go to trial, we're gonna go to civil court. Of course, if you get any time, if anything, it won't be, you know, a whole lot. But what I want is I want him fired. And not only that, people need to understand that some of these officers get fired and then they go get another police officer job in another state, another county, or whatever. I want him to never be a police officer in the United States ever.
Somebody just
want him to be a security guard.
Oh, I agree. Somebody just sent me this. This is just food for thought. They said the truth is they can still come up and get Roper indicted still. It says murder doesn't have a statutory limitation. So keep making the noise and getting loud about it. The civil trial can bring evidence into light that might compel the grand jury to do an independent investigation.
Well, I hope so. I really do. I hope so. And I want people to understand that to me, I guess society wants you to, like, almost hold these police officers to such a high esteem that they don't have to be accountable for anything. You can send a judge to jail faster than you can send an officer. That's backwards. Even they were letting you know even during the election that I don't know if he was the attorney general or whatever he was, how he and his wife were on the run, that he was going to be served some file or some paperwork. And he's the attorney general. I know he's making more than Craig Walker, but you want him to be held accountable for his actions.
Ken
Why
Paxton.
Can't these officers be held to impact it? Why can't these officers be held accountable for their actions? We hold senators and congressmen. If a senator has an affair, we want him to step down, get fired, leave the job. We need these officers to be held accountable. We're holding them above everybody.
Yeah.
And that's not
right. Civilian lives matter, too. Right. Absolutely. Dee, let me ask you this. So how can someone help with what you're doing? How can they get involved in and help you?
Well, of course, we do hold protests. They can always reach out to me. I have an organization called SLAMS. It stands for Second Look at My Son. We also have, when they have the little Dallas football games here in Dallas, the Cowboys play, or anything that's mm-hmm. going on at the AT&T Center, I have a nonprofit organization that has a nacho stand at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, so they can come out and volunteer and help us get that. So, I mean, they can reach out to you, and, you know, you can tell them, hey, you know, this person want to volunteer and help you, whatever, and then I can hook up with them.
Gotcha. I understand that. So Dee, wow. You know, I pray for justice in your situation because I think it absolutely is needed. I think it would absolutely open up a whole new avenue of all the police shootings that I've heard of. This is the first one that I've ever heard where they were denied qualified immunity because most people assume it's automatically guaranteed. And your case mm-hmm. or Travis Crane's case is the first one that said that's not the case.
Right. And I think that needs to be taken off the table.
Mm-hmm.
You need to understand that these officers have too much leeway. If you do something, then you got 72 hours to get yourself together. Mm-hmm. But if you go home and somebody breaks into your house and you shoot and kill the person that broke into your house, you don't have 72 hours. They're going to take you to jail right then and there for questioning. Why can't mm-hmm. you have 72 hours?
I agree.
You
now that I agree.
Hours.
Yeah.
So if you ain't got 72 hours, they don't. It's a lot of things that need to be taken away from them. This automatic qualified immunity. I mean, if somebody can hear me, I love Jasmine Crockett. If she can pass a bill, let's pass a bill. Let's stop giving these officers qualified immunity. Let's stop that right quick.
I agree. So, Dee, you have any final comments tonight? I mean, anything else you want to share? Because I am so glad. Y'all, listen, Dee told me about this story way before she got this ruling, but I didn't feel like the time was right on the story. And I think that tonight it was the timing. It's absolutely right to tell this story because this extra appeal that she did is making all the difference in us understanding that it ain't over just because the court comes back criminally and says, we didn't find any wrongdoing, that you still have the right to keep pursuing. And she got lucky and found an attorney that was willing to get in the fight with her. And that's a good thing. Because I think, I'm sure you probably get a lot of no's from attorneys as well.
Well, it wasn't that I got a lot of no's. I got a lot of, you know what, Ms. Crane? The car hit a white woman. Well, you know what, Ms. Crane? The car hit a white woman. Well, you know what, sir? That white officer jumped into my son's car and murdered him in front of his two-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So don't put her color up against mine and you want me to feel sorry for her. Because I don't. As a black mother, I have seen too many of us standing along on the side crying, watching a hurt take our babies to the grave. That's too many. I am tired of death. There should not be another mother crying because her son or her daughter has been murdered unjustifiably by a police officer. And he was unarmed. There was not a gun in my son's car.
Absolutely. Dee, is there a, can they follow you on social media?
Yes. They can go to, I'm on Facebook, Dee Train. They can hook it up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if y'all want to keep updates on this case, and I'm sure they're going to be developing pretty quickly, D Crane is D-E-E and then Crane, C-R-A-N-E on Facebook, because, y'all, this is a ray of hope for me. I mean, because, I mean, it seems so dim, you know, initially, but, mm-hmm. you know, that's what happens. Like, you know, we talked about Mamie Till, you know, Dee is the Mamie Till of 2022. She just wasn't going to quit, and they just were not going to shut her up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Right. And so I'm not going to, and that's something I even told my lawyer when I went in there. I told him, you can't tell me to shut up because I'm a writer, too. So if you don't want to hear me, I'll write about it.
See? That part.
So you can tell me not to say anything or whatever. If I'm writing about it and I'm publishing it, I'm not saying anything. My mouth is shut. So you can't muzzle me. How are you going to muzzle me? So I know they told Ashley Jensen's family not to say anything. I said, yeah, I'll write about it. I will write about it. Because it's unjustified. This family has gone through a whole lot. She lost her dad right after, then her mother. Now, I know her sister has been back and forth, too. And Aaron Dee, he's just sitting there looking like a dummy. Same way with Craig Wolf. The only difference is Aaron don't have his job. Craig still got his job. He's still dressing up in the blue uniform.
I agree.
So I want people to understand that they're talking about Blue Lives Matter. There are no blue lives.
Mm-hmm.
They change their uniform at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
We don't support the smurfs. These are police officers. These are human beings dressed up in a uniform. They are no different than a doctor and a nurse, an EMT. They are no different than a garbage digger. They are no different. But you want to put them on a pedestal. At the end of the day, they are just people. And this officer is a rogue, racist officer. He does not need to be on the police force. That's it. Doesn't matter about the color uniform he wears. If the color of the uniform was so great, then when I think it was a cop and his family, the officer was off duty, working just with his family at the stockyard, he got robbed. So if his life was so great, then you would have known he was an officer. But just because he was too close, he was just a regular human being. I don't take off my black uniform. I'm black forever. I'm a black mom. I don't get paid for being black. I can't retire from being black.
Mm-hmm.
So my life matters.
Absolutely. As, you know what, Dee Crane, you are welcome anytime here on Center Stage or Let's Talk Forward, anytime. Please keep us updated when this thing goes to the next phase. Have you got a timeline on when you will find out whether or not they're going to take him up on reviewing the case or if they'll just close it out? Do you have a timeline on that?
I don't know. I'm praying for a speedy decision. That's what I'm praying for. I'm praying that they go ahead and just deny it and let us go to court next year in 2023. That's what I'm praying for. Let's just go to court.
Well, you know what, y'all, let's pray with her that God gives her her wishes, and that this is and really, if you want to call it speedy, it really ain't speedy because this has been going on since 2017. So we're just going to pray that God, 2017, February 2017. So we're going to pray that God does grant her her wishes and this does happen quickly so that she will get her desired results. We're not going to just pray that it happens quickly, but we're going to pray that she get her desired wishes on this whole thing, and that Roper loses his job because he should not be a police officer, and that she is able to get him civilly. That part.
Right.
So that's what we're praying. So we're going to come into agreement. Yeah, we're going to come into agreement with her because the Bible says we need to touch and agree. is considered done. So we're going to come into agreement with her tonight that that's exactly what God is going to do for her in this next season. So you want that in 2023, we're going to claim it for her, that part.
Yes.
But thank you, Dee.
Yes.
Thank you, Dee, for stopping by tonight. Any final words?
No, thank you so much for, having me on your show. Thank you to everyone who was listening and all the questions and stuff that was presented. Thank y'all so much. And hopefully the next time y'all hear from me, we will be talking about a court date.
Wonderful. And we're going to bring her back. When we do get an update on that, we are absolutely going to bring Dee back. So we want to thank Dee Crane for stopping by tonight because, again, it's been a crazy week, y'all, a very emotional week for most Black folks in Tarrant County. And so to hear that it ain't over just because you don't get the desired results in a criminal court was a breath of fresh air. So I was very glad to bring the show tonight just to let people know we don't quit if we just keep fighting. I want to thank you, the audience, for listening. We do this each and every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. However, this week, we will be tapping in every single night to tell you what happened in the trial of Tatiana Jefferson. We're going to be getting updates from people like Leon Reed, who's going to tell us and explain to us exactly what happened in court so that we can follow intelligently and understand where everything is in the process. Also, follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Let's Talk Fort Worth. Follow us there. We will be glad to have you. Also, if you have a business, a product, a service, or a campaign, consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Drop me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. Also, y'all, listen, if you can't advertise with us, consider donating to the show. It's the holiday season. Remember us this Christmas. We are a show that aims to get it correct the first time. We're not a bulk media outlet. We bring it to you just as it is. And for this particular trial, y'all, we want to get people in the courtroom every single day who can also report from the seat. And then we want to start getting out on the street, like Smash the Topic. We want to be out there. When you got a story, we want to come to you. But that takes funding. And so we're asking you all to consider us this year. When you're donating, consider donating to Let's Talk Fort Worth so we can continue to do what we love to do, and that's bringing you the news. Also, we're going to pray for Dee Crane and his family. Continue to uplift them in your prayers, as things move forward. We're praying for, like she said, that God intervenes in this situation and that God gives her wishes, that it's quick and that they're able to move into a trial. We're also going to pray for the family of Tatiana Jefferson. We're going to put a little Zion Carr on the altar. We're going to uplift him, and we're going to tell God to keep him strong, and we're going to tell God that, listen, no matter what happens, don't let this situation break that young man. We're praying for his mother. We're praying for his aunt and his uncle, that they stay strong and that no matter what happens, that they know that God is in control and it's a bigger plan, whether or not we realize it or not. So, okay, y'all, listen, until Monday night, we'll be back right here telling you what happened in the Tatiana Jefferson trial of that day. Okay, until then, good night.